Hey everybody, Rob Maurer here. Welcome back to Tesla Daily. Today we are going to be talking about the release notes that have been published for FSD Beta 10.13. We've also got some updates on Giga Shanghai, a handful of battery-related updates, some interesting data from the used car market, and more. All right, looking at the markets, Tesla today, after a strong morning, finished up just 0.2% to close at $721.64 after trailing off in the afternoon alongside the NASDAQ, which ended down 0.8%. So still a nice outperformance for Tesla on the day. That drop in the broader market seemed to coincide with a report from Bloomberg that Apple is planning to slow hiring and spending for some teams within the next year. The market could be interpreting that as a suggestion that Apple is concerned or cautious with where the economy is heading, and those types of concerns tend to be even more heightened as we head into earnings season because this is when companies will be giving forward guidance, which is often the most important part of earnings season. So as we head towards Tesla's earnings report this Wednesday, what other companies have to say will also influence the market and therefore Tesla stock as well. I mean, we saw this heavily in Q1 when Netflix injected a lot of fear into the market, especially for higher growth, higher multiple companies. And we're coming up on Netflix's Q2 earnings report actually tomorrow after market close. So all eyes are going to be on that one again. Now, should Netflix be so influential on the overall market? In my opinion, probably not, but still going to be very interesting to watch. The line to watch for there is going to be net additions to subscribers. Remember, subscribers declined for Netflix in the first quarter, and they guided for a loss of 2 million paid subscribers in the second quarter. So that'll be kind of the benchmark, the threshold that people are watching for. So we'll keep an eye on that tomorrow, and then I'll also go through my forecast for the second quarter earnings report. We'll have live coverage of that on Wednesday, and then a reminder, most likely off on Friday for some traveling, unless I have to hop on quick and do a live stream off my phone or something if there's breaking news. Sometimes those off days can be a harbinger of sorts, so I'm not counting that out entirely. All right, getting into some of the Tesla news, I'll start off with a quick one here. We had talked last week about Giga Shanghai. We know that Tesla's had some downtime for upgrades, and as of Friday, there had been some mixed reporting on the status of those upgrades, whether or not Phase 2 was back in production yet. What I've been told is that Phase 2 on Friday did end up restarting production, meaning the upgrade for the Model Y line is now complete. That doesn't mean that production is going to go from 0% to 100% right away, but that was a very quick upgrade, so we should actually still get decent production out of July for Model Y. And then as we head into August and September, as long as things stay open, we should start to see some very exciting numbers out of Shanghai. As for Model 3 production or Phase 1, that line is now down for similar upgrades, although it sounds like it'll take a little bit longer. Tesla is apparently planning for that to take up to 3 weeks, so we could be looking at a restart for Phase 1 sometime around August 5th. Although with the way that Shanghai has been operating, I certainly wouldn't count out an earlier date. We've also got a quick update on Giga Texas. The Austin Business Journal has noticed that Tesla has submitted a filing for additional development on site at Giga Texas. We've talked about a number of these filings over the last year. Tesla is calling this project a production support area. It's on 68 acres. Land use is proposed to be manufacturing, but I'm not sure how specific they get with those designations. That manufacturing designation might just be a more high-level industry thing, but those are about all the details that we have right now. Interestingly, they do list the status as CC rejected. I assume that would mean completeness check rejected. The processes and notes section does show some items for the completeness check as still to be completed, but none of that itemized list has been rejected, so not sure exactly what's going on there, but might be interesting to check back tomorrow or Wednesday because a lot of these process steps have end dates of those days. All right, moving on then, we also on Friday discussed FSD Beta 10.13, some of Elon Musk's comments on it and how it was rolling out internally for testing. So hopefully we would see the release notes pop up soon, and lo and behold, today that did happen, Holmar's sharing those out. There are 16 bullet point updates in this release. We're not going to go through each individually, but I think they do broadly categorize into sort of five major categories here. Of course, any sort of bucketing like that is going to have some overlap, but one major category is left turns. Elon had mentioned this, and now Tesla calling it out directly in the release notes, saying improved stopping pose while yielding for crossing objects at quote-unquote Chuck Cook style unprotected left turns by utilizing the median safety regions. I doubt Chuck had ever really expected his name to show up in the release notes, but kind of cool to see that, and I can't wait to see his test of this. Of course, we won't see it until this gets released externally. Hopefully that would be later this week, but sounds like some major attention being given to interacting with medians, which should be huge for Chuck's turn. Also on left turns, they say that they have improved decision-making for unprotected left turns using better estimation of egos or the vehicle's interaction with other objects through the maneuver. There are also improvements here for creeping that may help Chuck's situation too. They say that they have enabled creeping for visibility at any intersection where objects might cross Ego's path, regardless of presence of traffic controls. I kind of thought they were already doing that, but maybe that's just been situations where it's been a go, then no-go situation that kind of ends up feeling like creeping. But anyway, they also note that they have made the speed profile more comfortable when creeping for visibility to allow for smoother stops when protecting for potentially occluded objects. So I'm particularly curious to experience these creeping adjustments because I think for me, the most frequent cause of discomfort on FSD beta is not things that are in front, but rather things that are behind. Oftentimes that's because of creeping behavior being a bit delayed or unnatural. And then for me, that makes me concerned that a driver is going to think I'm doing something, look away, and then just run right into me. So I've mentioned in videos before, I think my most frequent intervention is just applying the pedal. So hoping these updates offer a bit of improvement in those scenarios. The next major bucket is lane positioning. They've got 4 bullet points on this. They say they improved lane position error by 5%, lane recall by 12%, error of crossing and merging lanes by 22%, and then improvements in lane positioning on wide residential roads, and also reducing lane changes caused by cones or blockages by preferring a gentle offsetting in lane rather than an entire lane change where that is appropriate. So with those percentages, always kind of hard to know exactly what that means without understanding the base. So nice to see those improvements, but I'm not sure if that would feel noticeable in testing. But the in-lane positioning for wide roads or the gentle offset, those should be pretty noticeable and nice improvements. The rest of the updates, I would say, fall broadly into either perception or planning. So on perception, they say they've improved pedestrian and bicyclist velocity error by 17%, especially when the vehicle is making a turn. They've improved animal detection recall by 34%, decreased false positives by 8% by doubling the size of the auto-labeled training set, improved detection recall of faraway crossing vehicles by 4%, improved the quote-unquote is parked attribute for vehicles by 5% by adding 20% more examples to that training set. They have upgraded the occupancy network to detect dynamic objects and improve performance by adding a video module, tuning the loss function, and adding 37,000 new clips to the training set. That one I'm a little bit less clear on what exactly they mean by occupancy network, so help me out in the comments if you can on that one. And then they say they have improved speed limit sign accuracy on digital speed limits by 29%, on signs with difficult relevance by 23%, and on three-digit speeds by 39%. That would be beneficial in Canada, and of course internationally, probably not so much in the United States. And then speed limit end signs by 62%. I think this one will probably get a little bit less attention than it deserves. I mean, essentially what they're talking about here is FSD beta's ability to read, especially when they're talking about an end speed limit sign. It's going beyond just looking for a white sign with a couple of numbers in it and is interpreting some of the other context that might be on that sign. So you could imagine this being useful for school zones, eventually a better understanding of construction, of detours, everything that we learn from various different signs. And from my recollection, this is kind of the first time that we've heard Tesla talk about some of the more detailed distinctions that these signs can potentially carry. So I think that's pretty exciting. And then the last couple points are broadly on path planning, particularly for other objects. Tesla says that they have reduced false slowdowns around crosswalks by better classification of pedestrians and bicyclists as not intending to interact with the vehicle. That one I am also very excited for because, again, I think that causes unexpected behavior for the car that's following you. If you've watched my beta videos, we run into that a lot on Brady Street, so excited for that one. And then lastly, Tesla says that they have improved object future path prediction in scenarios with high yaw rate. So that would mean high rotation on the vertical axis. My interpretation of that would be a vehicle that's turning sharply. So I guess better path prediction for vehicles that are in that circumstance. Overall, it looks like some nice iterative updates. There's nothing in here about what Elon had previously said about being able to go kind of point to point based on a GPS coordinate alone. Sure, some of these features probably help facilitate what Elon was talking about there, but probably some elements that are still yet to come. In terms of how big of an update this really is, I think we'll get a feel for it when we do get to see those unprotected lefts being tested out. All right, next up, I wanted to highlight some really interesting data that has shown up in the used car market. This has been collected by Car Gurus. I put an article out on this on ShareLoft today. Hopefully many of you have read that already, so we'll just hop into the chart here, won't spend a ton of time on this, but as we can see, Tesla is an extreme outlier in terms of the change in average list price on CarGurus over the last 90 days. The average Tesla has increased by $5,500. That's more than 4 times the next brand, which is Genesis, at just over 1,000. So it's almost a 9% increase in just 90 days. This, alongside Tesla's long order backlog and the price changes that we have seen on new vehicles, I think is a huge sign that Tesla's demand is incredibly strong, and I also think adds merit to the argument that Tesla's price increases have been more determined based off of demand rather than just rising costs of goods sold. Now, of course, both are factors, but I think right now investors are kind of bearish on Tesla's gross margin outlook and not really fully considering all of this supportive data for demand that we have. We'll get a hint at how that is progressing with the Q2 earnings report, but because of all the strangeness in the second quarter, the second half of the year is really where we're going to see that play out. Anyway, year-over-year changes look similar, although to a less significant degree. Tesla's here up about $12,000 since last year. That is the highest. And both of these, by the way, are for brands under $100,000 because, yeah, $5,000 increase on the price of a used Lamborghini is probably not quite as meaningful to show as it would be for a Tesla. So anyway, up $12,000 year over year, that is the most. In terms of percentage, it's fifth at about 20%, but that really puts the increase over the last 90 days in perspective, with almost half of that year over year change being driven in the last 90 days. So I thought that was really interesting data. Hopefully you guys do as well. Next, we've got some news on batteries. First, from Panasonic, this has been reported by Benchmark Minerals, and I haven't really seen it covered anywhere else, but they are saying that, quote, Panasonic Energy is building a pipeline of 2 terawatt hours of battery and raw material supplies for Tesla as part of a new mandate from the Elon Musk-led company, according to Chief Technology Officer Shoichiro Watanabe, end quote. So I think this is pretty interesting. We know Tesla has talked about scaling up to 3 terawatt hours by 2030. If they're trying to have Panasonic scale up to 2 terawatt hours just for Tesla production, maybe Tesla has actually higher aspirations than that. Maybe that's tied to Master Plan Part 3, or maybe this is just reported in a confusing way, and Panasonic is simply just saying that Tesla has talked about them being a part of scaling up to somewhere around that level. So hopefully we'll hear more on that, but did want to at least pass that along. We've also got an update here from CATL. Automotive News is reporting that they have learned that CATL is considering at least 2 locations in Mexico for a battery manufacturing plant to potentially supply Tesla and Ford. Both locations are near the Texas border, and apparently they are considering an investment of as much as $5 billion for this project. So we know Panasonic investing a similar amount in Kansas. We may soon have a major announcement from CATL as well. All right, next, just a really quick update on the 4680 battery. Of course, we talked about Jordan at the limiting factors teardown of this last week. Remember, the energy density was supposed to be somewhere between roughly 270 watt hours per kilogram to 290 watt hours per kilogram, which, if accurate, would potentially be on par or even a little bit better than the 2170 cells that Tesla uses. Well, today there was an interesting Twitter thread from Matt Lacey, who describes himself as an electrochemist and battery scientist. And I noticed this because Jordan did end up liking this thread on Twitter. And as part of that thread, he said a few of the learnings that Jordan disclosed lead him to believe that the energy density is likely closer to about 250 watt hours per kilogram rather than that 278 to 290 range. So again, hopefully we'll learn more about all of this when Monroe kind of completes or continues their teardown. But in the meantime, I wanted to pass that opinion on, as it suggests that maybe there is a little bit of a lower end of this possible range of the energy density of the 4680 cell at this point. All right, last couple of things here. We've got updates from Twitter and updates on Twitter, starting with from Twitter. We know that Elon Musk has talked about a Tesla HVAC system before. He provided a bit of an update on that today, saying that it's, quote, on the future product list, especially important in places like Austin, which has next level amounts of pollen in the air, end quote. So just a reiteration of things that we have heard, but good to see. And then as for FSD Beta 10.13, which we just talked about, as I was recording, Elon did have a bit of an update on that too, saying that it still needs a few tweaks. So maybe we don't end up seeing an external release of that this week. I guess we'll just wait and see. All right, lastly, then a couple of updates on the Twitter court case. Of course, last week we had talked about how Twitter had requested an expedited trial. Now today we've got an update from Elon Musk's side, arguing against that expedition and also making some of their general case as well. This one is only 16 pages as opposed to Twitter's 64-page filing. It starts off talking about that expedition, saying that Twitter is requesting this because the merger agreement was scheduled to terminate on October 24th if it had not been fully agreed to at that point. So that was one of the arguments that Twitter used to move things up. But Elon's side notes that the merger agreement said that that date is automatically stayed if either party files litigation, which of course has happened. That would seem to make that a pretty poor argument. So Elon's side is arguing that a date sometime around February would be much more reasonable and would still be a very quick timeline relative to some other high-profile cases that are somewhat similar. The rest of this document is really laying out Musk's case on the bot issue, arguing that it's going to take a lot of discovery and interpretation. I think this snippet on page 6 covers the case pretty well. Reads, quote, just 3 days after the defendants signed the agreement, Twitter restated its monetizable daily active users figures in its Q1 2022 10Q, disclosing it had been double-counting users since the first quarter of 2019. By restating its financials, Twitter effectively admitted that changes in monetizable daily active users are material and portrayed its estimates as precise. Defendants promptly sought to validate Twitter's user base representations. Thus, on May 6, 2022, Musk met with Twitter's leadership, including its CEO and CFO, to discuss, among other items, how Twitter calculates its spam population. Musk was stunned to discover that Twitter's process for identifying spam accounts relied on human reviewers to eyeball a minuscule portion of the user base rather than utilizing the company's machine learning capabilities. Musk quickly understood that management did not have a handle on the bot and spam issue. End quote. From there, for both sides' arguments, it really seems to me to be a he said, she said situation. with Twitter basically saying that, hey, we've given you everything that we have, everything that you've asked for, and Musk's side basically arguing that no, they didn't, which just kind of seemed to be this whole entire thing since the beginning. So we'll see. I think the judge is supposed to hear at least the case for expedition tomorrow. From reading both filings, I think the case for such a significant expedition would be pretty difficult to justify at this point, but definitely not a lawyer, so we'll see what comes out of that tomorrow. That might be our first hint at how this whole thing goes. Also, on the Twitter situation, we do have a report today from the New York Post that is saying that Elon Musk is planning to file a counter lawsuit against Twitter in the coming days, according to a source. So much more to come on all of this, but that will wrap it up for today. As always, thank you for listening. Make sure you're subscribed and signed up for notifications. You can also find me on Twitter at Tesla Podcast, and we'll see you tomorrow for the Tuesday, July 19th episode of Tesla Daily. Thank you.